Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Commerce Experience. I'm your host, Brian Walker, Chief Strategy Officer at Bloomreach. Today, I'm joined by Zhusha Kesmar, co-founder and Chief Strategy Officer at Ontavo, a leading loyalty solutions provider based in Europe. I've gotten to know Zhusha as Ontavo is a partner of Bloomreach's, and I can say that Zhusha has more than earned her place in Forbes' list of top 100 female European leaders in technology. Zhusha speaks from the experience she has gained, taking Ontavo from startup to scale up, and has worked with many large brands, travel companies, and retailers with their loyalty program solutions, including many joint customers of Bloomreach's. With that in mind, in this episode, we're discussing loyalty programs, how you can get the most from them, what are the current trends, and what can we expect in terms of growth in loyalty, as well as how loyalty programs can be a force for good. Zhusha joined us from her home in Budapest, Hungary. Enjoy the show. Zhusha, thank you so much for your time and joining us here on the podcast today. It's so great to see you again.
Hi, Brian. It's very nice to see you too.
Zhusha, we always start with the same first question on the podcast, and that is, what was your first job or role that dealt with digital or e-commerce?
My first job that is related to digital was that I was a radio journalist at a radio station. And it's not the digital that maybe that you were expecting, but it is very, very digital back then.
Yeah.
And it was for like 5 years as I worked as a radio journalist during my university years. And it was my kind of only proper job because I was already thinking about the business plan about Ontavo. And then before even graduating, I started to work on it with my co-founders. And that was almost 12 years ago now.
Wow, that's fantastic. What kind of journalism was it? Was it kind of general news? Was there any specific focus you had as a journalist?
Well, it was everything. So I was sometimes a reporter covering news. Sometimes I covered these cultural events. And, you know, back then it was before these online matchmaker sites and much before Tinder. I had a show where people listened to find love and they would send text messages saying that, that I am at this age and I'm looking to find this person who is in this age and likes to do this and that. And then we would tell their phone numbers on air. So
Oh my gosh.
It was a completely different world. And I was the person who was there on the weekends or during holidays because I was the young person in the team who would cover everyone when they are off.
I wonder how many long-term relationships or marriages you're responsible for from your radio days.
Actually, what I know of, there is one marriage that we know of, which is, I think, it's such a great thing. I'm so happy for these people.
what a great story.
And they didn't invite us to the wedding.
What?
You know what I'm saying? They didn't invite us to the wedding. They could have invited us to their wedding, like being grateful for that or stuff, but they didn't do that.
Well, I think the 20-year anniversary, for sure, they should invite you.
Keeping my fingers crossed.
What a great story. But of course, we're here to talk about loyalty solutions. Ontavo, and you know, the business you've started now 12 years ago has grown up to serve many different larger organizations globally with their loyalty solutions. And I'd love for you to give us a lay of the land. What's the state of loyalty programs currently?
So loyalty programs these days are very popular and very needed and a very great tool to cope with the problems of the world that we have these days. And we have some insights about kind of why. So we saw this at the previous crisis, that during the COVID crisis, companies thought of loyalty programs as a great way to keep their customers close. In fact, 63% of them thought that loyalty programs are a great way to engage customers during the COVID crisis. And now we have this other trend when third-party cookies will be out and we have this recession and inflation. And these are the times when companies are really trying to keep their existing customers close. And I'm sure that you see the same thing at Bloomreach too, because we are helping the same goal, which is keeping customers close. And we also learned from a big report that we are producing. And by the time this podcast will be out, the report will be out too. It's going to be published in December. We learned from that research that 2/3 of companies want to increase their investment in customer retention. And it's just 1/3 who want to increase their investment in customer acquisition. So they're focusing really on their existing customers.
Yeah, of course, we see the same, right? We see, businesses now really transitioning acquisition marketing spend into retention-focused marketing, something that I believe should have always been really the focus, right? Take care of the customers you've already acquired. Take care of your best customers. Develop a relationship with them and double down on that. Obviously, you're always going to want to be adding new customers to the file, right? But then once you've added them, getting them to purchase again, incentivizing them, developing a relationship with them, and obviously loyalty programs, which I think we'll get into later, play a huge role in not only gathering important data, but driving a meaningful relationship with the customer. And, the customers are going to share willingly with the businesses they trust and they develop those relationships with. We've talked about that many times on the podcast. And I think loyalty is and loyalty programs plays a key role. How many, you mentioned like 2/3, and I think that's a pretty phenomenal number. 2/3 of businesses are focusing on retention, and loyalty seems like an area specifically they're investing in. I think you found some interesting results in this research that you spearheaded there at Ontavo as well.
Yeah. And the results are so interesting, and it seems that there is so much interest and growing interest. And I'm so happy about it because I truly think that loyalty programs are a great way to connect with customers. Just to tell like maybe two more examples about our findings, there is a great intention to revamp loyalty programs. Last year, it was 7 out of 10 companies who want to revamp their loyalty program. And this year, it's 8 out of 10 companies who want to revamp their loyalty program in the next 3 years. So it's a growing number in terms of loyalty program revamp. They see that maybe they have technology limitations. Well, most of the time they have technology limitations because they have all these ambitious loyalty managers and marketing managers. But then they struggle with actually making them happen because their technology is not supporting their ideas. So maybe another number is that companies are happy with their loyalty programs. We surveyed 260 loyalty professionals all over the world for this report, and we analyzed 290 million customer loyalty data points from the loyalty programs that are managed by Ontavo, our technology solution. And we came to the conclusion that 80% of companies measure the ROI of their loyalty programs, and 80% of these people have a positive ROI with 4.9 times of the investment that they invest. So they have 4.9x ROI.
That's pretty phenomenal ROI, obviously. And I think that kind of a business case is going to lead to a lot of, further investment for sure. It's an interesting paradox that there's a frustration and a need to revamp while there's so much success. And so I'm kind of curious, what do you think are the key drivers where, businesses are seeing success, they're seeing a positive ROI, they're seeing, the kind of metrics they're looking for out of these programs, yet, are frustrated, with their current capabilities and are looking to revamp, as you said. What are the key elements there that you would say are driving that?
I think it's two things. The first is the earn element, and the second is the burn element. And this is why usually how a loyalty program consists. What we call this earn and burn is the typical point-based loyalty program, which should be the basic loyalty program. But still, these are the two sides of a loyalty program. And there are multiple ways that they can be unhappy about it. So most of the times, the earning element for the customer consists of when they make a purchase or they do something else other than a purchase. Most of the times, the technology allows only rewarding purchases and This is something that a loyalty manager can be disappointed about. Mm-hmm. And the other is the burn part. So when the customers can spend points, and oftentimes it's very limited how customers can spend points. Oftentimes it's just when they are at the cashier, they can get some discounts, or if it's an e-commerce, it's added to the cart, but they can't do anything else. They can't go beyond the transactional relationship. And just having a transactional relationship in 2023, it's not going to cut it. Everyone needs more. Customers need more. They want to belong more to the brands that they love. And marketeers want to take their relationship on the next level with their customers too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just say personally, I've always been kind of, I don't know, cynical and a bit pessimistic about loyalty programs on a personal level that really just focus on transactions, right? Transactions and discounts. You know, for me, the loyalty programs that matter are the ones that make my experience better, right? And where they, you know, can reward the behaviors associated with my affinity to that product and brand, right? And I think that's an interesting sort of transition we see. And clearly social media and the opportunity for customers to become evangelists and advocates and influencers is a component of that. But I think also, you know, when you think about sustainability and other goals that are kind of increasingly important to the consumer, you know, there's an opportunity for businesses to kind of lean in and reward the kind of behaviors that drive a virtuous cycle that are attached to their brand value. Maybe it isn't sustainability, but maybe directly, but maybe it's something like, you know, I think one example might be I produce, you know, outdoor equipment, right? It's not just the purchase that I'm focused on. I'm focused on customers actually getting out there and using the product, right? And that's demonstrating the value proposition that I have behind my brand and the products that I produce. That kind of thing, I think, is a way to really tighten the relationship with the customer beyond just focusing on the ringing of the cash register.
Yeah. And it's so nice that you mentioned these examples. We talked about this before, that, for example, this mountain bear retailer. So I talked about earn and burn before, and this is how we call not only the mechanics of how a loyalty program is usually, but also the old type of loyalty programs are earn and burn. And it exists for 100 years now. I've seen magazines which talk about this earn and burn logic from 100 years ago. So it's quite old. You spend a dollar and earn a point. And it's quite easy to understand. It's quite straightforward. And it works, and it worked in the past 100 years, but we need something better for the future. And what you mentioned about rewarding like healthy lifestyle choices or providing early access or educational content or rewarding if someone refers a friend that becomes a customer is the future of loyalty programs. And let me tell you two great examples. The first is that mountain bear retailer. So they sell mountain bear. This is what they do. And this is an untouchable client. And we know them. They are called Bergzeit. And they really live by their values. After a meeting in the afternoon, they would go together hiking. This is how they are.
Yeah.
And they wanted the loyalty program to represent these values, the love for the outdoors, the love for the active lifestyle. So they built their loyalty program in a way that it rewards if you work out, if you go climb a mountain. And now technology makes this possible. And Tavo's technology is connected to Strava. And Strava is able to measure this altitude change if you actually climb that mountain. And the customer gets rewarded. They get points and they can spend that in the store or online later. And I find this genius because rewarding is not connected to a purchase, but rewarding is connected to a lifestyle. And you think of this brand in the weekend, in your free time, and you're secretly happy that I'm just not having a great time. I'm also earning a couple of benefits at Bergzeit.
Yeah, I love that example. Let's flip it over kind of at the other side. I'd love to talk about some of the recurring mistakes and challenges you see, you know, as businesses are out there executing loyalty programs. I'm sure you're very attuned to that as you work with customers and prospects, you know, engaging with Ontavo, thinking about things, but you also seen challenges, I'm sure, with clients who even, you know, are actively trying to revamp their programs. What are some of the challenges you see? What are some of the mistakes people make, and how can they avoid those when they think about implementing a loyalty program? It's obviously not just technology.
So I think there are three challenges that are out there, like most of the times. And I hear this from our sales team because they feed these questions back to us or these problems back to us. So the rest of the team can know this too, like what are the challenges that companies face or faced before when they launched their previous version of the loyalty program, because so many companies are reaching out to us with an existing loyalty program. And it's great because they clearly see what their challenges are. So these three things are that they tried to launch with a very packed loyalty program and they never got there. And they have a struggle actually launching. The second is that their existing loyalty program is not truly omnichannel. And the third is that their existing loyalty program can only reward transactions, the old school loyalty programs, but they want to grow, they want to go ahead, and they can't because they are stuck with their existing system.
That makes sense to me. You know, I think it's also true that, you know, loyalty requires kind of an end-to-end business process kind of behind it. So it goes beyond just the marketing organization. It needs to extend kind of throughout the business, throughout not only how you're marketing to customers, but obviously serving them. There's a lot of tentacles, right? And it's a significant change management exercise. So implementing a technology solution that gives you increased agility is just one component, right? You've got to think about sort of the change management, make sure you've got, you know, kind of alignment around the different parts of the organization and design a program that everyone can get behind and support and ultimately, you know, serve the customer through that. And I think that's another key element, right? Really thinking about your strategy, your program, and thinking about it as a change management. And that sounds big. And I know that's a little intimidating. It doesn't have to be big, but often, you know, doing that work ahead of time before you start moving, you know, through into solution design, I think is a critical step to make sure that, okay, you know, we can launch, we can implement, we can start to scale without causing a lot of challenges internally or having to rethink too late in the process, causing delays, cost overruns, et cetera. So I think that's really, really critical.
Yeah. And what I wanted to say is that we completely see that and we burnt ourselves couple of times before, and there were companies who came to us very enthusiastically about launching a loyalty program. But it turned out after we started the implementation that they don't have a loyalty concept. They thought that they have a loyalty concept, but they don't have the loyalty concept. And now we are smarter and we send these people to our partners who are loyalty strategists, or agencies who are doing loyalty strategy and system integration. And we send them and tell them, come back later when you figure this out, because that is so much needed. Because if you go into an implementation without a clear concept, then it's very expensive and time consuming. And sometimes I'm jealous of companies like Bloomreach, because I will think, of course, because I don't know everything, that your implementation time must be shorter. Maybe it's like different kinds of strategy that needs to be involved in your case.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of the same elements are always, of course, important. Yes, we can implement solutions and get customers value using things like plug and play use cases and other things so the customers feel very supported to get started. You know, there's the integration of the product technically, there's onboarding of a customer's data and so forth. And then obviously the change management side of things, getting a marketing team, an e-commerce merchandising team, et cetera, working with the product, you know, there's a ramp up period. You can really simplify that by bringing, again, sort of this concept of plug and play use cases, right? Here's how you do XYZ, really thinking through what are the key tasks, right? Making sure that merchandisers, marketers are super comfortable with that. And then obviously they may have a wish list of things they want to do with the solution. It's why they bought it. Okay, let's work toward that, right? Let's make sure we're providing the services and customer support there to enable them to get there. But maybe that's not what you try to do first. There's sort of a maturation of the product. So, you know, you can implement the solution quickly, but then, you know, kind of ramp up the utilization of it and the kinds of things you're trying to accomplish. And it's a very, you know, deep set of solutions. So there's a lot of opportunity, but maybe you start with, you know, some core basic use cases you're trying to solve for.
Yeah, an MVP.
And get everyone comfortable with that.
This is what we suggest all the time to start small with an MVP, minimum viable product. And when you ask me about what are the mistakes that we see, the number one was really to trying to launch with a packed product, because a packed loyalty program. Yeah. It's just too much to handle. Yeah. And especially in the world of loyalty programs, customers love if there is novelty. Customers love if a new function is added. So it's just only beneficial to not to put everything out there by the beginning, but to keep things for later.
Yeah, it's a hard thing because obviously there's somebody driving the project within a client organization. There's a business case they've developed that might be attached to some of these future-facing concepts and things they want to do. It's why, again, they might have purchased the technology. It can be, there's a tension there. A mature business leader, a mature technology leader has been through this before. They understand the challenges and they're going to look to do more of what we're describing, right? Launch an MVP, ramp up, build the skill sets, continue to move forward versus trying to do a big bang, right? A project launch or program launch. But there's always going to be tension there. And I think good coaching of clients is one element. Obviously, agencies, consultancies, et cetera, also have a role to play in helping advise clients through implementation and ramp up, et cetera, where they're involved. So, you know, it's a timeless problem. It's one that's not necessarily going to go away because it's kind of human instinct to kind of go for the big new transformational project. But the reality is that just increases risk for scope creep and downside delay and challenges that, you know, could have been avoided, right? And you may have gotten value faster by going for more of an MVP and a maturation process, right? We've seen that time and time again in my time, you know, working in e-commerce and digital marketing technology. Switching gears a little bit, I'm kind of interested in how the current economic climate is impacting like the loyalty space. You know, I could see kind of a couple of different potential directions that the current economic situation could send people in when it comes to thinking about their loyalty programs and technology. But I'd love to get your thoughts. What are you hearing? What are you seeing from clients as they face, you know, some potential challenges today? Well, challenges today and potentially more challenges down the road in the near term as we look forward into 2023.
Mm-hmm. So I think this season where we are in now is really similar to 2 years ago when it was the pandemic, because it was a shock, it was fear, and there were two kinds of companies. One kind of company was stuck and tried to freeze everything and try to keep it safe. And the others, while trying to do all these things that the first group, in terms of being cautious, they invested in some strategic directions. And that gave them a big advantage on the long run. And when people are reaching out to us, they also talk about this, like, there are things that they will not do in the future, but they would like to invest in loyalty, in customer retention. And it's so nice to hear that, because these are truly forward-thinking companies who, besides the hardships, thinking ahead and thinking about their own customers. What do you think? I would be very curious about what you think about this same topic.
Yeah, no, I think there's a natural tendency. And obviously, there's a set of pragmatic choices that need to be made inside of a lot of organizations. And, you know, I think coming out of this holiday season, we'll probably see, you know, businesses having to make some hard decisions depending on the outcome. You know, digital marketing and e-commerce, and obviously loyalty is a key component of that, as we've been describing. You know, that trend is not slowing down, right? It may have slowed a bit from the pandemic, you know, in a sense, right? Where we saw this dramatic acceleration in digital channels out of necessity. But the overarching trend, right, is not stopping. We continue to see e-commerce grow, outgrow physical retail, for example. And we, of course, know the impact of digital channels on demand and discovery overall. So the businesses that fundamentally recognize that and are thinking, okay, how do I position myself, not just for survival in 2023, you know, in a potential economic downturn. And obviously there's legit margin and profit, bottom line considerations, but at the same time, you know, planning forward, as you said, right? Putting their money behind those future projects. We're going to see both reactions. We're going to see businesses that have to, as you said, be very pragmatic and potentially make some difficult choices. And unfortunately, you know, there will be leadership and boards that, you know, don't really think about digital and e-commerce yet as that key pivot, right? That's still true. It's amazing, but it's still true. And then meanwhile, you're going to have businesses that maybe omni-channel businesses, maybe businesses that have been in business for a long time, seeing this as yet another moment, as you said, to invest. And I think the fundamental is really critical. Everyone out there in the market really needs to think about the path to profitability is by getting more out of the customers you already have, right? And treating the customers you acquire quickly in that same way. That's the real path to profitability. Not reacquiring the same customer over and over again, not seeing churn in the file, right? And so retention-focused marketing tactics, which is both in terms of direct marketing, but also how loyalty fits into that, are critical. And then another component, which I know we were planning to talk about, is the focus on customer data, right? Data is absolutely critical. And having a strong first-party, zero-party data foundation when it comes to customer data is table stakes now. And then, of course, activating on that. And the component of loyalty, which I know you and I have discussed in the past, is so interesting here. This is one of the best ways to gain rich customer data and feedback and interests and passions. You know, why does the customer love your product? How are they using it? What's their satisfaction level? What are they interested in? All those things are going to be volunteered from customers who are loyal to the brand, which gives you an opportunity to serve them more effectively. So it's not just quote unquote spying on them to suss out, you know, what their browsing behavior and how they're interacting with marketing. You can actually ask them, you
exactly.
know, and then, you know, you can even, of course, build in into your program, you know, an element of rewards for the customers who are willing to provide that kind of feedback to you. So that is, you know, such a rich kind of vein, so to speak, in the mountain, right? If you're mining for gold or what have you, that's the vein you want to follow. And you know, we unfortunately are kind of coming out of a period where acquisition marketing was absolutely the focus, and direct marketing, retention focused tactics, things like loyalty, frankly, were not as high a priority for many marketers. I think the pandemic changed that. And now I think it's an opportunity for people to continue down that path as we face a period of, you know, potentially slower economic growth. And obviously there's opportunities for many brands and retailers to take advantage of the shifting economic climate. But for many, you know, it's a period to hunker down, but hunker down and double down on the right things instead of just doing a flat, you know, straight across the board, 20%, 25% cut or whatever it is you're looking at. So anyway, sorry to go long on that response, Usha. Thank you for asking me the question. A little long-winded, but that's how I feel. And I think that's the way people should be looking at that. We talked about how, you know, businesses can be thinking about other types of elements to their program, getting beyond transaction, which I think is really a terrific opportunity. I think for many out there, that's a bit of a challenge. But as we think forward into maybe 5 to 10 years from now, we think about things like, I'm going to say it, I know everyone's cynical about the word metaverse. As we think about other potential user experiences of interacting with brands, interacting with products. When we think about IoT and embedded, technology embedded into product, all of these things, how do you see loyalty being a critical for some of those things that may be 5-10 years away from hitting mass adoption? How are you thinking about loyalty in that respect? And how do you think of even elements like NFT and blockchain playing a role?
So about how loyalty or a loyalty program would look like in 5 or 10 years, I think it will be essential for a business to have a loyalty program. It will be the new norm, and they will treat a loyalty program as a customer retention and acquisition machine, just with the same importance as selling products. It will be exactly the same importance, because one is about their customers and the other is about the product that they sell. I also think that there will be changes in business structures, because these days there is a marketing team, there is maybe a sales team, a merchandising, but there will be a team which concentrates on retention and customer loyalty. We see this like more and more often. There are chief loyalty officers, there are head of loyalties. And sometimes loyalty people are in the CRM team, or sometimes the CRM team is in the loyalty team. But definitely there is a new kind of department that is being born in front of our eyes. And this is the loyalty team. I think in 5-10 years, it will be completely normal if I buy for my clothes, then I will bring back my used clothes. And then it will be the part of the loyalty program that I will be rewarded for bringing back my clothes. And because recycling will be much more widespread, or it will be completely easy to be identified in a loyalty program. It will be either with a mobile pass that you will use when you board the plane, or it will be through card linking. So when I pay with my card or with my phone, there's this same card, mm-hmm. I will be recognized, yeah. You know.
Yeah. So, or my watch.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't have that much. I have old school watch. And so about NFTs and blockchain, well, that's a big question. NFTs are a really great match for loyalty.
Yes.
And right now, I just don't know what to think of them, because if you asked me 2 months ago, then I would have said that NFT-based loyalty programs will be great. But these days we see a decline in terms of NFT prices and a general mistrust in the whole blockchain. These are the chatters these days. So maybe I'm reconsidering my opinion about NFTs. But there are two use cases where NFTs are relevant in loyalty programs. One is when it's used as a VIP pass to unlock things, to be identified by, because NFTs by nature are unique. And what a loyalty card is, it is unique because it identifies you. So NFTs as a loyalty card, that's one of the use cases. But why not use a proper loyalty card? Well, because there is NFT as it's a hype. And the other thing, that it's tradable. And as NFTs are tradable, then these privileges are tradable. And the second use case is when NFTs are a reward. They are a collectible. They are a piece of art. And I really like the football example when, you know, they released football cards or soccer cards 20 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
So NFTs today are the same. It's just for the pleasure of owning them as a collectible.
Yeah. And I think there's an opportunity, obviously, to use NFTs as a digital component to a product and an experience that, again, kind of enhances what a customer, you know, gets. And it's also obviously a reward. So there's lots of different ways you could structure that. I mean, NFTs are in the trough of disillusionment, so to speak, to use the Gartner term for that. And, you know, that's obviously tied to the challenges happening in the overall cryptocurrency kind of marketplace and some of the scandals that have happened and a number of other things. And I think it's fair to say many consumers were already quite confused about what an NFT was, and there was a lot of buzz in the media, but it was really hard to suss out, like, what exactly is this thing? And if you went and checked out one of the NFT marketplaces, you're like, I don't really get it.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I think that's why a lot of consumers looked at it. And there's sort of a confusion about it, that yet I think the fundamental capability, technology, and opportunity around NFTs remains something that we will see blossom later. You know, maybe we equate it to the QR code, which was around for a very long time. Most consumers in Europe or North America, certainly not in Asia, but in Europe and North America, like, didn't understand it, didn't interact with it, thought it was kind of like, didn't even engage with it, or if they saw it, maybe they tried it once and then it was like, that was it. And then, of course, the pandemic led to mass adoption of QR codes. And now everyone understands essentially what that is. And a big piece of it, of course, was enablement through our mobile phones becoming so easy. NFTs, I think, may be on a similar kind of trajectory. I think 10 years from now, maybe we don't call them NFTs, which might be a good first step, but nonetheless, a digital asset that carries forward the product and experience you have. It is a tradable asset and it enhances your relationship with the brand or the experience you had. That could become something very meaningful, especially for, you know, consumer packaged goods companies, entertainment companies, travel companies. There's a lot that could be a component of that. And then for physical goods companies that are involved in, for example, sports or involved in entertainment, or there's a component of a lifestyle element to their product, which describes almost every brand, there's something there that could be really meaningful. And as you said, they're tradable and, you know, there's rules can be defined around how they're traded. Da, 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 da. It's complicated, but there's a big opportunity there. Yet, I think we're, as I said, in the trough of disillusionment now, right? And I think, I'm still pretty bullish longer term on the opportunity. And certainly blockchain, you know, perfect use case is loyalty, where loyalty programs could be more effectively linked together. Loyalty programs, you see this obviously with everything from the financial services industry that enables you to collect points and redeem them for products and travel and da-da-da-da, or travel and then hospitality, you know, airlines and hotel chains and et cetera, trying to collaborate through their loyalty programs. That's a very clunky process today. And it's very, again, very transactional. And I think there's an opportunity for blockchain to have a substantial impact underlying, right, you know, the exchange around loyalty. So longer term, I expect that will also become pretty meaningful. But short term, you know, I think people have kind of backed off a bit on those ideas.
Yeah, I think blockchain has a future in coalition loyalty when interchangeability is important in coalition loyalty programs. But if a company, a brand, a business wants to launch their own loyalty program, I think they are okay with like a kind of old school, like the regular.
Yeah, I know.
Blockchain has its risks and it's kind of, according to our head of product, and I had a couple of discussions about this with him, He thinks that for regular businesses who wants to launch a loyalty program for themselves, it's just the same great because it's the same secure and it's the same effective, but also cheaper because it's a lot of computing capacity that needs to happen for blockchain. This is why it's expensive and not environmentally friendly, which is oftentimes one of the...
Today, that's certainly true.
One of the causes why people and Gen Z may not like blockchain. And it's like a bit of they have this two trends at the same time, like not liking blockchain that much, but liking NFTs. So it's their own struggle internally.
Perfect lead in to our last question, Xuxia. And maybe you double down on what we were just talking about, or maybe you choose something different. But the last question we ask every guest on the podcast is what futuristic digital commerce or marketing innovation you're most looking forward to? Or alternatively, what do you think is really overhyped and you wish we would start talking about and kind of move on? So you can kind of go high or you can kind of go low in terms of which thing you'd want to highlight. Or both?
I would like to highlight NFTs and not just because we talked about it.
Okay.
NFTs are something that marketeers now think that they would really, really need to do. But I think that today is still a small subset of people, these crypto natives who appreciate these kinds of rewards or identification. And those companies should think about NFT where they're either selling a premium product or their brand is centered around that audience, that younger audience who are already crypto natives. And the example for the previous is like high fashion. So if you have an NFT version of the Chanel bag that you purchased, maybe that's a real benefit for those who purchased that Chanel bag because they purchased it as a collectible and an NFT is a collectible. Or if you buy the ticket to the VIP section, to the Bird Cup, then maybe you appreciate an NFT ticket because it's the same experience as you actually bought. It's special and it's secure and it's limited. So this is where I see the potential, but I don't see mass adoptions at least in the next 5 years. And it's great storytelling needed. And I think it's a challenge for the future of marketeers, how to make it, if to make it widespread or not, and what will happen in 10 years.
Yeah, we already talked about it, but I fully agree. I think short term, it's something to be very careful with and kind of selective. Most consumers don't, as we said, understand them very well. Even digitally native, younger Gen Z consumers, only 5-6% of them even really understand the term, right? Mm-hmm. Or are interested. That's a pretty low number. Even amongst a group of consumers, you would think would be much more hip to these trends. So it's still very early. But to your point, there are probably some specific places it might make sense today. We'll see some interesting experimentation probably continue. But longer term, I think there is an opportunity there. But now might not be the time to focus on that because frankly, you know, having it really work with your consumer is probably fairly low and you may just confuse them. But longer term, there's an opportunity. So there's a tension there, trial and error, testing, and understanding when we're getting toward mass adoption, having a strategy and plan. But that's probably a number of years away.
Yeah,
it's not something you probably need to figure out for 2023.
Yeah, maybe we can start talking about it in 2025. You will be like episode exactly. Episode 250 for this podcast. And then if you will have me again, maybe we can exchange some ideas about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Xuxia, thank you again so much for joining us here today. And thank you to our listeners for dialing into yet another episode of Commerce Experience. Always a pleasure to have you. Thank you, Xuxia, for joining us here today.
Thank you, Brian, for having me.
And for the listeners here, hit the landing page for the podcast on bloomreach.com. We'll provide a link there to the Ontavo, published research that Zhusha mentioned once it's released, so that that's a way to find that, and obviously a way to get in touch with Zhusha and Ontavo as well. Meanwhile, be safe, be well. Here's to good business.